Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, a look at Black and Latino cultural houses on campus, the Krannert Center showcases community artists, and NTV's Knees summarizes the G8 summit in Evian, economic fallout from the sinking U.S. dollar, and the INCO strike in Sudbury, Canada. But first, these headlines.
With the headlines for IMC Radio News, this is Kevin Heinrich. The following appeared in the Daily Outrage on thenation.com. The creators of Google Internet search engine recently added a sister site called Google News. As the company put it, this site is a, quote, a news service compiled solely by computer algorithms without human intervention, unquote. The computers crawl some 4,500 websites daily to assemble the news of the day, the hour, and the minute. But they don't assemble indie media sites. Those apolitical computers at Google News have had an on-again, off-again love affair with the indie media reports, and indie media itself rages with speculation that it has been cut off from the news Google site, or is about to be cut off, or was cut off, but is now back on. By some accounts, Google News is avoiding indie media as an expression of its quote-unquote pro-war patriotism. By other accounts, it's been pressured to do something about indie media postings considered anti-Semitic. Whatever the case, indie media, all of it, is currently off Google News. You can tell by conducting a Google News search for indie media and sorting it by date. Nothing comes up after May 16th. So a uniquely editor-free, computer-generated news service feels the need for human intervention after all. Why? To block out a uniquely editor-free, citizen-generated news service. Will Google News now steer clear of every Middle Eastern publication to have ever given a voice to anti-Semitic remarks?
The Urbana-Champaign IMC website reports that while U.S. servicemen and women continue to die during the war in Iraq, the people who sent them into war continue to profit. Dick Cheney's former company, Halliburton, has already received government contracts totaling more than $600 million, according to new documents released by U.S. Representative Henry Waxman, a California Democrat. Cheney's company profits in many ways, including providing logistical support when U.S. troops are deployed overseas. The $600 million in contracts were obtained without competitive bidding. There is no ceiling amount to the amount Halliburton can receive. 2 weeks ago, Congress approved a military budget over $400 billion, an amount that doesn't yet include the cost of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, despite the Pentagon's inability to account for more than $1 trillion of expenditures.
The following headline was also taken from Matt Bivens' Daily Outrage column in The Nation. The logic of the Akron School Board, which has voted 5-2 to collect fingerprints this fall, is that thumb scans at the cafeteria cash register work better than PIN codes or cards, which both can be forgotten. Dissenting school board member Rebecca Heimbaugh expressed disbelief that children in Akron could have to be fingerprinted, quote, to go through the lunch line or buy a cookie or carton of milk, unquote. The good news is that the $700,000 state-of-the-art system is being funded out of the budget for child nutrition services. Sorry, that's not the good news. The good news is that according to the Beacon Journal, fingerprinting and thumb scans at lunch, quote, will not be used, at least initially, in elementary schools, unquote.
The following headline was taken from the Urbana-Champaign IMC website. A used car dealer breaks the law if they roll back the odometer, effectively lying about their product in order to persuade you to buy it. Is it legal then for a global corporation to lie about forcing workers to inhale toxic fumes, endure beatings for not meeting production quotas, undergo forced sterilization, be shot at for trying to organize a union, or work for pennies a day? To fend off growing criticism of its sweatshop manufacturing practices, Nike Corporation launched a public relations campaign in California. An activist took Nike to court for lying about working conditions. The case has made it to the U.S. Supreme Court, which will be ruling shortly on the question. Nike claims that as a corporation, it has the rights of any individual in the United States, and therefore it should be allowed to make false claims about working conditions in its factories. Global justice activists argue that such claims amount to false advertising. Those are the headlines for IMC Radio News. I'm Gia Kyugan.
On Saturday, the Cranon Art Museum held an opening for Here and Now, an exhibit spotlighting local artists. IMC reporter Andine Gross attended the opening and files this report.
The event called Here and Now, Art from Greater Champaign-Urbana at the Cranon Art Museum, May 31st through August 3rd, 2003. Featuring 45 local artists. For a significant number of these artists, this exhibition is the first time their work has been presented in a curated museum show. According to Joseph Helfenstein, director, the goal of this exhibition was to reflect the hidden dynamics of the visual arts in this community. I'm speaking with Jesse Knox. Jesse, tell us about yourself and where you're from.
Yes, my name is Jesse Knox. I'm an artist here in Champaign-Urbana area. I'm here at the art show. It is fantastic. This community has always needed something like this, and this is some kind of historic moment. Joseph Helfenstein, the new director, he came in with fresh new ideas, open mind, and not only did he come in, it's one thing to have fresh ideas and an open mind, but it's another thing to put them into work. And you know, this show it speaks for itself. I have never seen Cranon Art Museum like this ever, and I've lived here in this community for quite some time. Yeah, so.
And can you speak about your pieces? They're really evocative and powerful and beautiful, sort of a mix of photography and can you tell us about your pieces?
Sure. The first one would be a pencil piece. It's called Stephen Biko's Grandmother. It is an older black woman in South Africa. I did this piece. It was when she got the news that her grandson, Stephen Biko, had been murdered in the Republic of South Africa. And it's a real stunning piece. I tried to bring out all the sorrow, all the hurt, all the road work in her face, the years of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Secondly, I have this piece. It's an oil piece. It's called Relief, and it displays a leaf on the head of an African, which when these African people get headaches in this particular tribe, they go to a tree and they get this leaf and they put it on their forehead, and they absorb into their skin, into their pores, and relieves the headache. Another striking piece, a very well highlighted, a lot of darkness, but on his face is very highlighted. The third piece is The Hunter, and The Hunter is a piece of a 12-year-old boy that's hunting birds in 50-foot trees with a bow and arrow. He also eats from this plant that caused his sight to be intensified, which is another very striking piece.
They're really beautiful, and I'm so happy to meet you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, what'd you think of the show tonight?
I thought it was great. I think they should do it every year and include more diverse artists in our community. I think this is just a great thing to bring people in the community in to see all the rest of the shows going on here, too.
Did anything in particular strike you about the show?
Well, I particularly enjoyed seeing some of my friends and acquaintances' pieces of art in this context. Just really touched me.
Listening to Lanterna, music that reaches you in the part of your brain that daydreams.
For IMC Radio, this is Ondine Gross.
Today, blacks, Latinos, and Asians make up about a quarter of the U of I's undergraduate student population. The Black House and La Casa Cultura Latino were founded to provide black and Latino students with opportunities to foster academics and enrich campus life beyond studies. Gia Kugan took a look at how these houses are perceived among students.
Today, African Americans, Latinos, and Asians make up slightly more than a quarter of U of I's total undergraduate enrollment. Like an ethnic division of the city, the cultural houses on Nevada Street are known to many as Minority Block. Some question whether these cultural houses promote solidarity within their respective communities or encourage self-segregation on a more statistically diverse campus. The Black House still provides a wealth of cultural resources to African-American students. Kareem Muhammad is a second-year U of I graduate student who frequents the Black House and talks about the benefits of its cultural programs.
Like, say, for example, right in my situation, like in the PhD program, like, it's not like a lot of students of color, to say the least of being, like, black students. So, you know, it's certainly, I think, you know, I like the best of both worlds. You know, I love, you know, integrating with other cultures as well. However, it's cool to be able to come to, you know, an environment like this and kind of, you know, get that kind of, you know, a sense of, you know, understanding and connection.
U of I senior Jean Carla Lino is Latina, but says she rarely visits La Casa. Lino says her friends are of all different races.
There are certain bonds in case, like, with certain cultures and certain ethnicity that you feel close to. I don't have that here. I don't feel like, you know, I'm very close to the Latino community and I do much for it. I don't really have that many friends in it because I've never really like been like, oh, I must go to La Casa because, you know, people are like the same as me.
Brian Montes is a graduate teaching assistant in anthropology. Montes reexamines race, power, and privilege in light of the modern Latino experience. He says the term self-segregation is unfair.
It's a sense of self-affirmation because people of color, whoever it might be, they've been historically marginalized within the U.S. And so we look for that space, whether it's cultural, religious, linguistic, we look for that space where we feel comfortable because we're not accepted in a dominant society.
Minority groups aren't limited to people who face racial issues. Homosexuals, transsexuals, and bisexuals also seek a cultural space. C Street is one local party spot for many people in the gay and lesbian community. A C Street club goer who asked to remain anonymous says why he thinks homosexuals may segregate themselves.
Well, it's hard to explain, but I mean, I think it's typical, you know, once a gay person come out, they typically only hang out for gay people for a while, and then they eventually accept themselves and go back to the original social group.
Rebecca Henricks is a member of Pride, the registered student organization for gays and lesbians. Henricks says the majority of people in Pride still hang out with their straight friends, but form closer bonds with other Pride members.
A lot of people still feel more comfortable going out with LGBT people because they're able to go to the same kinds of clubs and stuff like that, you know, and they're not self-conscious about being like, oh, look, that person looks hot or something like that, wondering what other people think.
Some look to promoting the many cultures of the university. Senior Jean Carla Lino is also a member of the Illini Union Board. The Diverse Student Board puts together cross-cultural, women's, and gay and lesbian programs for everyone at the university.
There's always hope that, you know, the mix will be, I guess, everyone will be more unified. Just like there's always hope that there's going to be peace in the world, no hunger, like major problems in the world.
The Illini Union Board is just one of many campus organizations that unites people of different backgrounds.
For IMC Radio News, I'm Gia Kugan.
finally, Auntie B's Knees brings us the G8 summit in Evian, economic fallout from the sinking U.S. dollar, and the INCO strike in Sudbury, Canada.
Hello, this is Auntie B's Knees with your business report for the week of June 2nd. Leaders of the world's 8 richest countries met in Evian, France this weekend to discuss how best to maintain their stranglehold on the global economy. The G8 summit featured representatives from Japan, Germany, France, Italy, Britain, Canada, the U.S., and Russia in 3 days of talks starting Sunday. Together, these 8 countries control half of the world's wealth. As has become the norm for such summits, diplomats met inside a fortress fashioned out of a remote luxury resort. A 15-kilometer security perimeter around Evian, including restrictions on air travel and boat travel in the region, was enforced by more than 25,000 Swiss and French riot police, supported by German cops hired specially for the occasion. As leaders were whisked by helicopter from the Geneva airport to the summit on Sunday, more than 100,000 people took part in marches originating in Geneva and in the French border town of Annemasse, where an anti-G8 camp has been set up by activists. The two marches joined on the Swiss side of the border, then headed together towards the security perimeter. In the French city of Lausanne, activists disrupted the hotel district where some summit delegates were staying and blocked a highway leading to Evian with burning barricades. In Geneva, protests continued well into the evening as frustrated activists descended upon the city's shopping district. In confrontations with police, activists met with violent crackdowns incorporating stun grenades, rubber bullets, tear gas and water cannons. Needless to say, no activists or activist organizations were invited to participate in the G8 talks at Evian, though French President Jacques Chirac took plenty of time over the weekend to convince reporters that he's concerned for and respectful of the views of others. Of course, Chirac was not talking about activists in the anti-globalization movement, or even about U.S. President George Bush, photographed at the summit giving the French leader a friendly pat on the bum. Rather, Chirac was making reference to the 12 delegates he deigned to invite from influential growing economies such as India, Brazil, Mexico, and Malaysia. These delegates were invited to the G8 table on Sunday to address so-called development issues. But the summit has made no headway on crucial development matters like debt relief, access to generic drugs, and agricultural subsidies. Instead, the energies of G8 leaders at Evian are focused primarily on healing the diplomatic rifts created by recent U.S. and British aggression against Iraq and on figuring out what to do about the tanking U.S. dollar. Ever since Bush's administration announced the largest trade and budget deficits in U.S. history, started invading countries without the support of the United Nations, reneged on its promises at the World Trade Organization, sold off the reconstruction of Iraq to Republican Party donors, and announced that it expects to run global security through the use of bombs in space and small-scale nuclear weapons paid for by American taxpayers, even the most brazen investors have become reluctant to add U.S. companies to their investment portfolios. The result is that prices are falling, unemployment is rising, and the U.S. dollar is weakening. Last week, the dollar sank to an all-time low against the euro. The sinking U.S. dollar has also contributed to rises in the currencies of Japan and Canada. While at first this may sound like bad news for the U.S. and good news for other G8 countries, the reverse is more accurately the case. Though the U.S. administration pays lip service to the notion that a strong dollar is good for America, U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow has also noted that a lower dollar makes U.S. goods more competitive on the international market, making it easier to export. In time, a weak U.S. dollar could work to bring the U.S.'s massive trade deficit under control by flooding the globe with cheap American brands while imports become increasingly expensive. Expensive imports in the U.S. are handy for another reason. Inflation has become very low in the States, leaving some economists concerned that deflation or falling prices on all goods could stagnate economic growth. This has already happened in Japan and could be imminent in Germany. Increasing costs for imports could help to keep inflation in America stable while the country recovers from the massive budget and trade deficits and other economic fiascos ladled out by the Bush administration. For many other G8 countries, however, the low U.S. dollar is an economic millstone. The U.S. controls the world's largest economy, and the dollar is the currency most commonly used for trading in precious commodities such as oil and gold on the international market. As the U.S. dollar drops, returns on these commodities also shrink, while competing currencies rise in value. But with a rise in currency, exports become harder to sell, a situation that again could favor the U.S. market. The dropping U.S. dollar has already contributed to the rise of Japan's yen, That's bad news for Japanese exporters on whom Japan is relying to avoid economic meltdown after almost a decade of stagnant growth. Japan is currently locked in a downward spiral of deflation after 41 straight months of falling prices, low interest rates, drooping consumer spending, and increasing unemployment. Deflation makes goods cheaper, but debts more burdensome, as lower incomes and profits make debt harder to pay off. The high euro, also rising in relation to the U.S. dollar, is meanwhile threatening to undermine several of Europe's export-driven economies. Germany, Europe's wealthiest nation, is dominated by a large manufacturing sector that is particularly sensitive to currency exchange rates. As the euro has climbed from an all-time low in 2000, Germany has correspondingly slid into recession. The International Monetary Fund now says Germany is at a high risk of deflation. Michael Rogowski, head of the Federation of German Industry, says that every cent the euro increases gives him worse stomach pains. As two Merrill Lynch economists have noted, quote, "The euro's strength versus the U.S. dollar and the British pound means eurozone growth will be chopped and dished out to the United States and the United Kingdom," end quote. As part of its response to these economic woes, European governments are slashing spending on social programs like pensions, welfare, unemployment benefits, healthcare, and education as a way of pumping money into the private sector and boosting investment. Proposed pension reforms in France are the cause of ongoing strikes, protests, and labor unrest. Just last week, Germany's ruling party approved a controversial package of economic and social reforms designed by leader Gerhard Schröder that has also caused protest in the streets. The plan, which could easily have been designed by the International Monetary Fund itself, cuts unemployment benefits, pensions, and health care while loosening labor laws so that small companies can fire employees more easily. Many members of Germany's ruling Social Democratic Party feel that the package betrays party principles. They, along with union workers, students, and activists, accuse Schröder of trying to dismantle Germany's welfare state. Nonetheless, about 90% of party delegates in attendance at a meeting in Berlin last week voted to back Schröder's proposals after the leader threatened to resign and warned that failure to implement his plans would leave the door open for a return to power by the country's right-wing Christian Democrats. Support for Schröder's party has waned since elections last September as unemployment rises and recession worsens. Hundreds of union workers, students, and activists protested outside of last weekend's meeting in opposition to the package, continuing a struggle marked by nationwide strikes 2 weeks ago. That struggle is far from over. Activists have until later this year to work against the proposed policies when they come up for approval in Parliament before passing into law. The weak U.S. dollar is also implicated in a strike at the world's leading nickel mining operation in Sudbury, Canada. Sudbury's Inco mining facilities produce about 9% of the world's nickel. 3,300 Inco employees in Sudbury and Port Colborne walked off the job at midnight Saturday after their labor contract expired without a new agreement being negotiated after 2 months of talks. 95% of the members of United Steelworkers Local 6500 voted on Friday to reject the company's contract offer after last-minute talks to avert the strike failed. At issue is disagreement over company pensions, which both sides say was too wide to salvage a deal. Inco has been struggling with rising production and labor costs at its Sudbury operations, particularly escalating costs for energy and pensions. The weak U.S. dollar, which has pushed the Canadian dollar high, has worked to increase these costs as the company calculates its spending on its Canadian operations in U.S. dollars. The company already had one of Corporate Canada's largest pension deficits at the end of last year. This year, Inco's contributions will more than double as the company makes up for poor market returns on its nickel and other metals, a situation also linked to the drooping U.S. dollar. Partly due to the low U.S. dollar and the correspondingly high euro and Canadian dollar, Inco's development of two of the world's biggest nickel deposits in the French territory of New Caledonia and on unceded native land in Atlantic Canada's Voisey's Bay have also been experiencing cost overruns. Nonetheless, construction of the two facilities marks the biggest expansion phase in Inco's history. Production from the new facilities is expected to increase Inco's total production by 40% when they become active in a few years. But that's not keeping the company from whining about being unable to pay its future retirees. It must be frustrating to slog away in a mine all day for a growing company that wants to cut your pension to boost its profit margins. All of Sudbury's production was down Sunday as non-unionized staff took over the care and maintenance of seven mines, a mill, a smelter, and two refineries. Union officials said Inco was transporting staff to the facilities by helicopter to avoid crossing the picket line. The strike is expected to add to nickel supply worries on the international market, helping to push prices of nickel and other metals higher this week on the key London Metal Exchange. And that's a wrap for this week's Business Report. Signing off, this is Andy B's Knees reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.
That wraps up IMC Radio News for this week. Contributors include Andine Gross, Gia Kugan, and Kevin Heinrich. The coordination of the UC IMC Radio News is funded by the Funding Exchange's Paul Robeson Fund for Independent Media. If you'd like to get involved with this show, drop us a line at radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820 extension 1. No experience is necessary. Archives of this program are available at the IMC website, www.ucimc.org. Financial contributions are also welcome. You can send those checks to UCIMC, care of Radio News, at 218 West Main Street, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Tonight, the IMC Folk Music Series is proud to present queer punk folk performance artist Bitchin' Animal in a smoke-free, all-ages, not-for-profit venue, the Channing Murray Foundation at 1209 West Oregon. The show begins tonight at 9 p.m. and doors open at 8 p.m. We have a track from Bitchin' Animal to take us out called Drag King Bar. Take care and see you next week.
There's a hoe down there. There's a hoe down there. There's a hoe down, hoe down, hoe down there. There's a hoe down there. There's a hoe down there. There's a hoe down, hoe down, hoe down there. Well, I was bored with a lesbian scene. Told myself I gotta find another thing. So I strapped on my boots and I walked down the street and I rolled right into the local DKB.
Drag King Bar, that is.
When I walked in, word and way, well, I thought I might be straight at the Drag King Bar last night. It's unlike me to look at boys, but when the girls are packing toys, I can dig that scene alright. Then across the bar, he played the air guitar and mouthed those words real sexy. Well, it was then I surely knew that this one would be a two if I played my cards just right. Well, I was drunk and I was bored and he was cute, so I was lured at the Drag King Bar last night. Where all the boys are really girls and the fags about their pearls at the Drag King Bar last night. Then at 9:45, he scoped me again and drank his beer so sexy. Well, it was then I surely knew that this one would be a two by the end of the night tonight. Yeehaw! Well, I was drunk and I was bored and he was cute, so I was lured at the Drag King Bar last night. All the boys were really girls and the fags got their pearls at the Drag King Bar last night. Then he used the line that works every time. He said, hey, is this seat taken? I said no. He said, let's go. I said, where? I don't care. I'm a Scorpio. Take me home right now. Well, I was drunk and I was bored and he was cute, so I was lured at the Drag King Bar last night. For all the boys were really girls and the fags about their pearls at the Drag King Bar last night. Then at 11:45, as I began to delve into that Drag King last night. Well, my thoughts were so strange, but my luck sure had changed. I was queen to the king last night. Yeehaw! Well, I was drunk and I was bored and he was cute, so I was lured at the Drag King Bar last night. All the boys were really girls and the facts about their pearls at the Drag King Bar last night.
Again, you can catch Bitchin' Animal tonight at the Channing Murray Foundation. Doors open at 8, show starts at 9. Take care.